A sprawling desert of green and blue stone as far as the eye can see. A patchwork of massive fingerprints frozen in time, like an ocean of glass. It is a perilous journey to pass through its cold and unyielding valleys and crags. Yet, in the very center of this expanse lies the jewel of the wastes itself, a floating archipelago hanging far above a treacherous maw, a refugee haven and a slice of paradise for those who survive the trek. You, lucky, privileged, haunted you, are among them. You are invited to experience a moment in the life of one Nat Hatchery and discover what happened in the Malachite Wastes.
There are many places in the city, I would say, that Nat has become familiar with over the time that Nat's lived here. And most of them happen to be the different areas that are the natural parks and the areas below. But on the day-to-day, there's somewhere that Nat goes and sleeps and rests and recuperates and then gets up in the morning. And when Nat opens their eyes this morning, what do they see? What is waking up as Nat feel like?
Well, I feel like waking up as Nat feels like a little bit of a surprise and a comfort every day. I think when they open their eyes, the first thing that he sees is just kind of a room, a small sort of humble room. It's got some cool things in it. It's maybe got some imported cacti. It's got treasures from all of the adventures that Nat has taken. And it is somewhere that Nat recognizes. And that makes Nat really happy. That this is a place that they've lived in long enough that they recognize it. And all of the little objects in the room, there's like rocks and little fossils and little crustaceans and things like that, little bones. And they all have a little label on them and kind of a little sectional label as well with a diorama that kind of says what day it was, what date it was, but what the things are not labeled. And they're kind of on every surface, and every once in a while, if you were to pay really close attention, you'd look around and you'd notice that one little section doesn't have a label every once in a while. But most things have a label. Sometimes they've got names with them, or like the Haberdash family or things like that. But they're just kind of covering every little surface of this little tiny bedroom.
Nat, you hear a little, like a little kind of like tap, 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 kind of almost coming from the ceiling. I imagine this place might have like, Nat's not very big, like they might not have incredibly high ceilings on it.
No, I would guess that it would probably be like a little... Like Nat likes to be cozy and enclosed. So they would seek out somewhere that was kind of an unused weird room.
I was literally thinking that it's almost kind of like burrowy. Like at some point it may have been sort of an unfinished basement and you know, the landlady was trying to like show him different places and he's like, oh, I live in the basement.
Right next to the, you know, right next to the boiler room, you know, that weird little, it's like maybe someone used it as a wine cellar once, but it's got a floor.
All right. You know what? That's and like she's like doing the calculations of like how much the room next to the boiler should be. But you hear that kind of like tap, tap, tap. It's almost like maybe like the handle of a broom tapping on the ceiling. And that's kind of how, not that Nat would necessarily need it, but kind of how his upstairs neighbor sort of checks in on him for the day almost.
So Nat looks around and how long has the upstairs neighbor lived there?
I think the upstairs neighbor has been there longer than Nat, like as long as Nat's lived in the building.
So Nat finds right next to the bed a little stick and just tap, 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 and makes a little accompanying rhythm to the tapping that they heard.
And you hear there's sort of like the like, it's hard to describe like the sounds of footsteps sounding pleased, but just kind of like I'm satisfied. Good. Nat is home and alive. Good. That is satisfactory. And as Esther Greenwood, who is the upstairs neighbor, she's kind of a little, like, middle-aged, maybe on the... She would call herself, like, she's living her golden years. And the apartment upstairs is, like, a nicely furnished, sort of like an old New York-style apartment that, like... She's lived in this apartment maybe since she was a kid, you know, like it's rent controlled. She really likes it. And as she comes down the stairs, she just sort of passes by where the basement kind of window might be and sort of gives Nat a little like, hey, fella, how you doing this morning?
Oh, hey, Esther, have a good day. I hope your walk goes good.
You have a good day, too. I wanna hear if you find any new discoveries when you're out today, okay?
Oh, there's always good stuff.
And she makes her way. She works up in Hephaestus Hall, and she takes a cab every day to get up there. And you can hear kind of the city start sort of coming to life around. You know, people are getting ready for work, and there's the sound. There are sounds that Nat has learned to anticipate in this building. The sound of, you know... kettle going off at a certain time. There's a building nearby with more recently a young family's moved in, and there's the sounds of kind of little feet running back and forth as they get ready for school. There's a sort of rhythm to it that is sort of like, the day is ready to begin. Are you ready for the day to begin?
And Nat is always ready for the day to begin. Nat loves life. Nat loves that stuff is happening. So Nat gets pretty excited when he gets to get up. And they make themselves a little cup of coffee in their little sort of camp coffee. It's a bit rustic, and this is the same little coffee pot that they take out and use on an open fire if they can find anything to burn when they go out, or if they remember to bring anything to burn, depending on the day.
Oh, yeah.
And... takes a little coffee and sits next to their little, like, barely can reach to see it window, and drinks their coffee, and then gets up and heads out to head to their job at the botanical garden, or the non-botanical, the anti-botanical.
The anti-botanical garden is truly a best way to describe it. It's not difficult to get from kind of where Nat lives, right at the edge of the lower city, up into the lower city. Actually tends to have a little bit better rent because it's less likely to get sunlight, and so if you don't care that much about getting sunlight, then it works out great for you. And there's what is truly just like a very long set of stairs to get from point A to point B. You know, there's sort of a, as you get to the top of where like the mid-city begins, there's like that big open kind of plaza area. You enter the business district, but sort of to the left before you fully get immersed in that, there's this beautiful, you know, park area, sort of not quite the expansiveness of Central Park, but a Central Park. And there's also, you know, like a little cable car you can take up, or, you know, however... It's daunting if you were, for instance, had bad knees. You wouldn't probably want to walk up, you know, the 160 steps it took every day to walk from top to bottom. But if that was what Nat was up to.
So I head out, and probably when I hit the bottom of the stairs, I'm like, oh, look, they put a streetcar in. That's pretty cool. Maybe I'll take that tomorrow. And then starts heading up the stairs at a little brisk jog. My little stubby legs just doing a double time up those stairs. Sometimes if there's a section that goes off the side that still follows the stairs, Nat'll kind of prefer to get into the sort of the rocks. And sometimes people will, you know, today maybe not, but sometimes people will look at them like, I don't know, are you doing okay over there? But Nat likes the shale and is used to whether or not he's going to slip. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Other people, there are sort of like, you approach the park, again, much like Central Park, there are areas that are sort of sectioned off, like, please do not climb these rocks. And I don't really think that's ever stopped Nat, nor would most of the people familiar with the park. If someone stopped Nat from climbing up those rocks, they don't know who Nat actually is and their role here.
Yeah.
Does Nat have their uniform on already, or do they usually put it on when they get up to the museum and the area itself?
Nat owns 6 pairs of their uniform, and that is all that Nat wears. Nat wears their uniform every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've learned that Nat needs extra name badges, so they just leave the badge attached to the shirt at all times, and they just... It's like one of those Men in Black things. You open the closet, there's just 16 of the same thing, but only 5, because Nat doesn't really need 16 different outfits.
And it's this, you know, this kind of khaki. In some places it'd be like, well, it should be green, it's malachite. But if you're too green, then you blend in completely, right? This sort of khaki colored, like almost like a camp style shirt, embroidered on the pocket. Above where this little heart would be is the Hammerstone Foundation, the nice insignia that goes with that of like the crossed hammers. Reaching the crest, I guess, of this park where you kind of have a more flat area, you walk through the wrought iron gates of this beautiful geological park, which is one of the kind of great wonders of this city. Tell me a little bit about what one might encounter in the geological park.
Well, I feel like Nat should probably tell you a little bit about the park himself, because this is his whole job.
You get in there and already there are a little group of kids lined up, and you see a teacher kind of wave to you and say, "Oh, Nat, it's such perfect timing. The second grade class just got here, and well, they were hoping you could, you know, give them a little tour of your favorite place in the city."
"Oh, that's great. Hi. Just one second. Do you kids want to say hi to Sam?"
Yeah. And there's a couple kids who've, like, done this before, you know, like, the year before. And it's like, "Sam, yeah, let's say hi to Sam."
"All right, we gotta check to make sure that they're still kicking, right?" So Nat goes to right next to the gate. And as the wrought iron comes down and it probably embeds into these, like, large pieces of malachite that have been brought there to be the bottom paving stones. One of them has, you kind of can't quite tell, but there's just a little cracked piece of the stone in the very bottom. And if you look really closely, you can see that someone has whittled a tiny little door handle onto it. And Nat kind of hunkers down, little bony knees sticking out of their little shorts, and makes a very small knock on the door and says, "Sam, I'm coming in.
Sam, we want to see Sam. What is Sam?
And they open the door, and you can see that Nat's just kind of pausing, listening to the kids try to guess what it is, and just really milking the moment. And just very slowly creeps open the door, and inside, there's just more rock.
Some of the kids kind of look puzzled. There's like a deep sigh of disappointment from one of the kids.
Nat looks inside and looks at the kids and says, "Well, I guess Sam's not home," and kind of leans his voice into the little hole.
One of them's like, One of them's like, I bet Sam is home. I think Sam's probably home.
And the little rocks sort of start to shift and they kind of rumble. And then out from underneath the bottom is this little tiny carved head and these little tiny pinchers. And you can kind of see on Sam's forehead that there's a little tiny, looks like some kind of a marking. And it looks like Sam might be the tiniest golem crab buddy that you've ever seen. And he lives right under that rock. He kind of rumbles out. He looks up at the kids, makes some pinches. And Nat goes, well, it's a good thing you're here, Sam, because, you know, we wouldn't be safe without you watching over the park.
And the children are enraptured. There are some kids who are like, oh my god, I didn't know that they made golems so little. Oh, do you think he's a crab? Do you think a golem and a crab had a baby and then that was what this is? And like, there's already little hands shooting in the air. They have so many, and some kids are just shouting. And then there's one kid who keeps like tugging at the hem of Nat's shirt, kind of like,
I want to ask Sam a question. Is it okay if I ask Sam a question? Is that okay?
Well, sure you can. What's your name, buddy?
Oh, my name's Oscar.
Hey, Oscar. Well, why don't you ask Sam the question? Now, I can warn you, he's a little tight-lipped, but if you ask, I might be able to help you figure out how he answers.
Okay. And you see, he gets kind of shy, the way, because, like, now all the kids are looking at him, and, like...
I was just wondering, because there's only one of Sam, and he's really little, and, I was just wondering how he protects the whole park by himself if he gets bigger or if he's really fast or something.
Oh, that is a really good question. Well, so Sam's alone now, but there used to be a matching Sam on the other side, and nothing terrible happened. They just had another job to go do because they had to protect some other rocks. But hey, Sam, how fast can you move?
And Sam kind of... You see that there's like a little like kind of like glow in Sam's little like golem eyes and sort of makes a little zip over, little zip back.
Well, that's pretty fast, but what else can you do? How come you're the guardian at the gate here?
And you can see that Sam kind of goes back into the hole and like starts to rumble, and there are all along the kind of like fences of this gate, there are like little posts that start to rumble in time, and the kid's like, oh no, I didn't mean to cause an earthquake, or I don't know anything.
Well, what's happening here is that Sam is an alert system, but don't worry too much, because every different kind of rumble means something else. This one just, what does this one mean? Sam, is this your, I know there's one for when somebody really bad comes. I don't think it's that one. Don't worry. I think
little,
there's
little
one.
Little golem shakes it said no.
Or, when someone unauthorized is trying to open the gate. Well, I'm pretty authorized. I don't know. There's one for, oh yeah, there's one for when there's a giant monster. Oh, it's not that one either. Okay, sorry. Let me think of what else you might be able to have an alarm for. Oh, is it a testing of the system, Sam?
And the little golem kind of nods and the teacher's like, yeah, don't worry, Oscar. The golem knows you're not a giant monster. You might look like a giant monster to Sam, but we all know that you're not a giant monster. And Oscar's like, no, I would not. I don't want to do anything bad I don't want to get in trouble in the park.
No, it's okay, little dude. You can't get in trouble in the park for that because, well, you see, Sam has to test the system every couple of days anyway, so you really just provided a really good excuse.
He kind of puffs. He's like, that's really cool. Thank you, Sam. Thank you for showing me, Sam.
Yeah, so Sam is made of a combination of igneous rock and metamorphic rocks, which is two different kinds of rocks. Did you know there were more than one kind of rock?
And there's a bunch of kids that go, no. And there's one kid's like, yeah, there's actually like three or four different types of rock.
There's at least three or four kinds of rock. Yeah. And so The metamorphosis rocks, those are the ones that are layered, like malachite. And that's why Sam looks like the place that he lives. But also, igneous rocks are really strong. So that's why Sam's so strong.
And the teacher's like, I'm sure you guys have so many questions. Let's let, you know, because like they're all like popping up like, what about jewels? Like they all have like all these little questions. And she says, okay, we're going to save our questions till the end of the tour. That way, Mr. Hatchery here, or Ms. Nat, do you have a way that you like to be addressed?
Oh, Annie's fine. You can call me Miss, you can call me Mister, you can call me Captain.
Captain! And then all the kids are like, Captain! Yeah, Captain!
I'm not a real captain.
But we could still call you Captain.
All right, that sounds good.
Okay, yeah! And they're you know, we'll save our questions for Captain Hatchery till the end of the tour. And they're all like, okay. And it looks like they've printed out, the teacher maybe printed out like a little like a scavenger hunt worksheet almost of like, and they're like getting all excited about it. And one of them's like, Captain Hatchery, there's one that looks like a lion somewhere. There's a rock that looks like a lion. Do you think, cause that's on a scavenger hunt.
Oh yeah, we'll get there. Don't worry about it. So, as you can see, in the park, there is almost every kind of rock that is represented here in the archipelago, especially the super rare maw rocks. Now, normally, we don't want to take things out of the maw because that's part of our industry, and it's also kind of how our whole island sticks together, so you got to be careful about that. But we've made some really great advances in how we can take stuff out while making sure that everything that lives in those rocks from the maw, because there's all sorts of stuff. It's a very alive place. It's not just barren like you think about it. The wastelands, they don't got much waste, if we're honest.
You see a little, like, hand pop up?
Yeah.
My dad said that the wastelands are really really dangerous, but did you say that you go in the wastes?
Well, the wastelands can be very dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. So you gotta go out knowing what you're doing. And since my whole job is to talk about rocks, well, and bugs and stuff that lives in rocks, and like those weird birds that are kind of not really alive, and well, you know, I go out there for my research. And sometimes I can take people, but only adults. You gotta be above a certain, well, not a certain height, because, you know, I'm not above a certain height, but you gotta be above a certain age to go on that ride. But it's okay, because here at the Orion Hammerstone Memorial Geological Park, we do have a representation of most of the cool stuff that you will see out in the wastes, and most of not the dangerous stuff that'll eat you.
But yeah, Nat is completely right. This park is set up to be a showcase for all of the natural wonder that a place that is created entirely from rock hold. So there's different places within the park that showcase different type of mini versions of the rock formations you might see out in the wastes. You see rocks from the maw, different things that people will mine when they're down in the kind of deep magical core of underneath this archipelago. You see there's like kind of almost like a small cave formation that allows some of the fungi and other things that would grow in the deep dark to kind of have like a little microcosm there. So there's all of these wonderful little almost like microbiomes that are specifically designed around the way that the geology of the malachite work. And actually in the center of the park, kind of right where the more museum area is, like they've got their visitor center and the gift shop and then stuff about the history of how the park was created. There's sort of a dais that has under a glass dome a floating replica of the malachite waste, the archipelago itself, that just kind of hovers in this dome that uses some kind of magic to keep it suspended. As the kids kind of like are, you know, children and have, they just want to see so much and they want to interact, they want to touch stuff. I'm sure there are like certain places that Nat is like, where's the place that is Nat's favorite place to take the kids besides seeing Sam when he's leading a tour group like this?
His favorite place for kids in particular
is inside. So if you go kind of past the gift shop and right before you get to the point where you're going to be done with whatever you're doing there and you get to go to the gift shop, there is a set of caves that is a replica of the maw, of part of the maw, where people are working and where creatures are living and where most of us can't survive. And it's pretty small, and it's probably 3, maybe 4, if you count a little narrow tunnel that only the kids and Nat can fit into. And his favorite part is when you walk in for the first time, it's very hot in there. It's very sweltering. It's dry and it feels like a sauna, and it gets really dark at first, and you have to follow these little stones that they've laid on the path kind of that go along the side, and they're just covered in a glowing lichen. And then you go in and you kind of duck under, and then you come around a corner and the largest of the caves opens up, and it's probably a person and a half tall. And Nat likes to tell you that if you were in a real one of these caves that wasn't one of the mini one that they found, you know, and brought here because it was small enough, that this would be stories tall. And the entire edges of the cave are carved in these patterns, sort of like when you get wood that's had spruce bark beetles. And in the grooves, there's this kind of pale yellow glow that gets brighter as you go, because each trail is left by a plasma slug. And so if you look up, you can see them all moving and making these trails, basically melting the stone around them as they travel through eating the minerals. And their trails get dimmer as they get further away from the slug. And just hearing the sound of all the tiny voices gasp at the same time as you come around the corner is just Nat's very favorite thing.
And that's exactly, you know, walk around, there's wow, like kids who are seeing the night sky for the first time. There's a sense of awe in this, and there might even be some of the kids who are in attendance whose parents might work in the mall, who they might have dragonborn or like plasmoid family members who are able to withstand that kind of heat. But it's a dangerous place working down kind of in the mines, and it's not something that any of these kids would have had an opportunity to see before. So kind of looking around, and they always have so many questions. It's how do they glow? What happens if they eat all of it? Is the cave go away? Like, they always have all of these, the way that little young minds work, where they're not thinking of, oh, well, how can we make use of this somehow? Or like, what's their purpose? It's like just a sense of awe for the sake of what an incredible thing that exists that I've never seen before. And it's always when the teachers end up coming in from a side passageway because they can't get through the main passage, the little passage, that they're going to be asking them more like, and how do the plasma slugs contribute to the economy of the city? Like, it's like, that's where you get those kind of questions from.
Before they get there, Nat is like, all right, here's where we're going to have some secret knowledge. It's just us little guys now, right? So if you look around, this tube, this was made from a lava tube. So that means that lava, before we were up here in the air, lava came through this part. And it's what's called a, hang on, I got this one. It's what's called a volcanic pipe. And that means a really big plasmoid or a piece of lava came through and made this hole. But if you see all the slugs, as they go along, they're eating at it. And when they get bigger, some of the slugs are, you know, bigger than I am.
Whoa, that's so big.
Now, those are just the ones that live down in the maw, because these little guys, they're just juveniles. But when they get bigger than your hand, they get transported back down into the maw so they can live in their natural habitat. Because they're going to need a bigger cave than this, right?
Yeah, you can see some of the kids are like putting their hands up to the slugs to see, like, this one's older because it's the size of my thumb, I think. But this one's... They're really just like, oh, this one's almost, Captain, Mrs. Nat, this one's almost the size of my hand.
Mrs. and Mr. are okay too. That one is almost the size of your hand, but you know, our hands aren't really what they're measuring by. I think they're looking for 6 inches or longer, and my hand's only about 4. But, you know, the cool thing is that nobody has to live in a place they don't want to be. These guys get to live in this place when they're little, and they only put off a little bit of heat so we can be here with them. And then when they get too big and too hot for us, and it would be dangerous for people to get to be near them, well, they go down to the maw, and some of your maws and paws get to see them.
You see one of the kids go, My dad says that he saw a plasma slug as big as a cow one time, and that one day that if I want to also be in the mine, then maybe I'll see one as big as a cow, but it can eat you if you're not careful, but it won't eat you on purpose. They say that it just eats you because you're in the way of the rock, because it actually wants to eat the rock. Is that true?
Yeah, so they eat minerals. So, I mean, some people are made of minerals, so they gotta be more careful, but if you're not made of minerals, then you'll do just fine.
Good. I think I might be one. I want to see one day.
I mean, technically, we all got minerals in us, but you know what I mean.
What kind of minerals are inside of me?
I don't know. What kind of a person are you?
Kind of looks down at his hands. I am 7, and I am gonna be really tall one day, and I'm a person who likes strawberry ice cream.
That's great. All people who like strawberry ice cream and are 7 years old are gonna be really tall have carbon in them.
Wow, that's oh my god. And one of the kids like, I don't like strawberry ice cream. Do I have carbon inside of me?
That's okay. Nat takes a look at everybody, and some of the species Nat recognizes. Some of the species, this is the first time that he's ever seen them, as far as, you know, she knows. And kind of assesses them based on whether they kind of look like they have rock on them or in them.
Yeah.
And whether they are maybe a plasmoid or whether they're, you know.
You think of today's bunch, there's maybe like one person who probably is like entirely non-carbon-based life form, and everyone else is definitely a carbon-based life form. And the non-carbon-based life form is like, it's okay. My dad says that we don't have carbon in us, but that's normal for us. We're not supposed to have carbon in us.
Hey buddy, what's your name?
My name's Whisper.
Hi, Whisper. You got a great voice. I love that. That's really cool. And yeah, you're right. You don't have any carbon in you because you're not supposed to. But it looks like everybody around today, other than you, has carbon in them. So you all share that in common. You know what else you share in common?
What else do we have in common?
You all live on a floating island. How cool is that?
That's really cool. And you just hear like, I know some people who don't live on a floating island. What is it like not living on a float? I don't know. I guess they don't get to see cool stuff every day. Do they have a different kind of sun? Yeah, their sun comes out every day, so it's hot all the time. And you see like the kids are like chattering amongst themselves on what it must be like to not live on floating islands. And that's about the time the teacher comes and kind of like starts hustling them out. And it's like, what do you guys all say to Captain Hatchery? There's a little chorus of, thank you, Captain Hatchery. And the teacher says, you know, would it be all right with you, Nat, if as the kids do their scavenger hunts and they have any questions, they can come up and ask you?
Oh, yeah, sure thing. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't introduce myself to you. I'm Nat Hatchery.
And the teacher's definitely been on tours with Nat before and shakes their hand and is like, you know, it's so nice to meet you, Nat. And one of the kids tugs on the shoulder and is like, but Nat said that their name was Nat already. And she's like, yeah, but no, we just got to know Nat. And there's this kind of like confusion this kid doesn't like totally understand. And it's just like, thank you, Nat. That was a really good tour. And if I have any questions, I'll go and find you.
Nat kind of picks up on it, and instead of getting sad, maybe there's like a brief flash of a little bit of sadness. Nat kind of picks up on it, and he's like, "Well, it was very nice to meet you, Miss," to the teacher, and then he leans down to the little kid and he goes, "You know, sometimes I get the feeling that I've met people before, but it's always good to meet you again."
And the kid kind of has like up like a shy smile at that, just sort of kind of getting singled out in a nice way. This is my favorite field trip.
This is my favorite field trip too.
And the kids all kind of scamper out through the, some of them are going back through the tunnel, and some of them are like, no, I want to go this way because we haven't seen what's down there yet. And you can just hear their voices sort of echo off in every direction as they run. And the kid, Oscar, the little kid who at the beginning was the one who had Sam, you can see that they're crouched down on the floor, and it looks like they're like writing something down.
Nat sits, hunkers down next to them, but not so close to them that she could read anything that Oscar's writing, and kind of goes, hey, buddy, you got something special you're recording here?
And kind of jumps. Oh, what? And kind of looks in the teacher's step. Do you think it's gonna, can I tell you something, but you gotta promise that you don't gotta think it, you're not gonna think it's stupid.
Okay, I don't really think most things are stupid, so I think you're pretty safe.
My mom said that when she was little, she would come and she would leave notes for Sam, and that you could leave a note for Sam, and then sometimes he would leave a note back for you. But I was just thinking that, but like I did, maybe it's stupid because we didn't talk about it, but I was thinking maybe I would write a note for Sam and then maybe that he would maybe one day write back to me.
I think that's a great idea. Why don't you write your note for Sam and I'm gonna just be here with you for a little bit, kind of alone, but not really alone. I'm gonna check out on these slugs, make sure they're all doing healthy. And when you get done, you can either just give it to me, or you could give it to Sam on your way out, or you can give it to Sally in the gift shop.
Okay. If I give it to you, do you promise that you'll give it to Sam? Because I don't want everybody to see me because they might think it's a baby thing to do. But I think that I want to still give it to Sam.
I think that's just fine. And you know, maybe not this time. But it's okay in the future if you give somebody a note like Sam, who people think maybe can't write back and they think maybe it's just imaginary. Because, you know, we live in a world with a lot of magic and you never know what it's gonna do.
And you can see, like, he's this little kid and he takes that in and his brow kind of furrows. And, like, you can see them, like, he's, like, piecing together, like, yeah, there is a lot of magic. And, like, keeps writing his little secret letter.
Echoes and kind of, like, good. Supposedly is checking on all the slugs. And, like, they are. They're checking on the slugs. They're making sure nobody's too big. Nobody's got to move on. It's not really their job, but they do it anyway. But they're also just kind of running their hand along the wall in a quiet moment by themselves and, you know, tracing some of the paths. And looking at where they went, and if somebody were paying close attention, they might notice that they'll trace the paths, and then when the glow stops, they kind of slow down, and then they kind of keep moving along, and just at some point, they just say to themselves, yeah, it's all right. You still got a path, even if the light's not still on it.
Oscar wraps up his little note, and sort of darts out of the little cave system there, and the kids are all running around the park. It's not as crowded as it would be on a weekend when people come, like, again, it's like a museum. It's a nice place to go on a date or to take the family. But there are couples that are walking around. It looks like maybe if people have, like, a day off or early morning, like, you know, Nat may or may not recognize some regulars who have, like, places they like to sit around the park, or, you know, there's a definitely a kind of rockier outcropping area that is notorious for, you know, teens coming and making out and getting up to nonsense. And the young woman at the gift shop, I think Sally, pops her head out as she sees Nat, just kind of waves. Hey, how's the tour going?
Oh, hey, Sally, it's pretty good. It's a lot of kids today. And Nat looks inside of his pocket, and just under the little flap that folds over that has the embroidery on it, underneath of it in Sharpie or something like Sharpie in this world, it says Thursday.
Oh, it's a Thursday, so, you know, there's a lot of kids groups.
And she's like, yeah, they've been, you know, in and out. It's getting to the end of the year, so it's a nice break for the teachers, I'm sure, even though they have to babysit them at the same time. Nice. Everybody likes to go to the geological park. I know I did when I was a kid.
Sure do. Hope you're selling lots of little rocks.
Lots of little rocks.
No idea what they sell in the gift shop.
And Sally kind of smiles and is like, you really love now. I feel like I see you every single day here. You must really love the geological park.
Yeah, well, you know, it's my job, so I come down and do what I can to help. You know, I gotta make sure the kids aren't writing stuff in the, you know, in the monazonite, and making sure nobody's trying to smash any of the crystals to see if they're gonna light on fire, you know, all the usual stuff.
You really, like, you just have such a, did you come here a lot when you were a kid?
No, I came from somewhere else. It wasn't nearly as good as here. There weren't nearly as many rocks. Just as many bugs, though, so that was good.
And she kind of nods, and she's like, okay, like, I'm not gonna keep asking if that's not okay. That's fine. Yeah, good. I'm glad. Well, it's so great you ended up here to find the thing that you're passionate about, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty great. I mean, I've always really liked rocks and bugs, and, you know, I used to kind of tell people about them, but not like this. This is really pretty much the best memorial geological park I've ever been to.
And you just see there's sort of a wry smile, and she's like, I think this is the best memorial geological park I've also ever been to.
Oh, well, we've got that in common, then.
You've done such a beautiful job kind of describing a little bit about the kind of features and the different stuff. As the day sort of progresses and, you know, people will stop Nat and ask questions or even just inane stuff like, oh, where's, can you point us to the bathroom? Occasionally, Nat will probably catch some kids trying to climb a little outcropping to climb on some, like, lava rocks. And, like, at one point, they're approached by sort of a tall, illithid fellow who kind of leans, like, almost, like, 90 degrees, tilts body down to lean down to speak to Nat. Hello. Such a strange coincidence. I heard you being referred to as the captain earlier.
Oh, hi. I'm Nat Hatchery. I'm not a real captain.
And one of the, like, it's like tentacles kind of comes down and shakes your little hand. Oh, that's such a funny coincidence if that's a nickname. My nickname is also the captain, you see. That's just something we have in common, huh?
It is something we have in common. That is so great. What's your name, friend captain?
My name is Reginald, but you can call me the captain.
All right, captain.
And he sort of like, kind of looks like, I'm not sure to what end or what we're allowed to speak of it here, but I have heard rumblings from some of my colleagues who I respect very much that you are the foremost expert in tours of the wastes that you can find in the Malachite Archipelago.
Oh, wow, tours. That's a bit highfalutin. It's not really that official, but, you know, I do go out there pretty regularly. Most afternoon, evenings, I'm out there, and any day that doesn't have a name on it. And, you know, if you come by the port and plug sometime, that's just up the road there, you know. If I'm there, we can go out, sure. I'd take you with me if I'm going out myself.
I don't know if you know how extraordinary it is to go out in the waste at all. I know people who've lived here their whole lives who've never set foot in the place.
Yeah, it seems not that common, but you gotta be careful. So, you know, I usually have all the things that I need already. And if you need any, like, specific kind of food, which I know I don't remember whether you guys eat food or not, but, you know, if you do, then you'll want to bring that, and,
Don't be too concerned. They've been making real strides in biologically created organic brains that aren't from sentient creatures, so that shouldn't be a problem. I'll make sure to eat beforehand. God forbid we get lost.
What a weird thing to say. Oh, that's what you eat. You eat brains. Oh, well, that's great.
He's like, I'm not embarrassed about it, but it is something. It is a stigma, perhaps, that we're overcoming. Is the brain eating? I mean, we need them to eat, but we don't try to. And, like, you can see some kids are giving him like the side eye over, and then he looks at them and they're like, what? And like scuttle over to where the teacher is.
Oh, yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, sometimes people look at me a little bit funny, too, but, you know, sometimes if you just introduce yourself to them, it goes over all right. But, yeah, no, if you come by the port and plug, then I think we could probably go tonight or tomorrow or, you know, whenever I'm there.
Wonderful. I'll let you know very shortly. There's a fellow at my place of work who's just decided to quit cigarettes, and I thought another sort of death-defying adventure might take the place of the need for cigarettes. You know, there's a little bit of a death wish sense in it, but in a fun and safe environment that doesn't. Well, I suppose if there is a dust storm, it could hurt your lungs, but it otherwise wouldn't have the same impact. I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but dust storms.
Yeah, dust storms. Yeah, we'll try to avoid those. Those are not so much fun. Those, you know, we try to go out on days with a good dust forecast, and, you know, if all else fails, you just gotta follow the spark beetles, and then sometimes, you know, they're gonna, like, make a little bit of... Anyway, it's not important. So, I'm here most days, and Nat kind of looks away, and then looks up toward the gate, looks kind of at the sun, checks a little watch-like device, looks back, and is like, oh! Hi there, sir. I didn't see you standing there. Did you have a question for me?
No. I think you've answered all my questions. Thank you very much for that.
Great. Well, you have a lovely day here at the park, sir.
I shall. Thank you. Thank you very much, Captain Hatchery.
Oh, you know my name. You know, sometimes word does get around. What was your name?
I'm also the captain.
Ah, well, that's something we have in common, then.
Indeed, it's something that we have in common. I should get back to work. This has been very enlightening. Thank you so much, Mr. Hatchery, Captain Hatchery.
It all works.
Oh, good. And he starts kind of making his way. Where do you think in the park that Nat sort of gravitates to as, like, does Nat stay kind of moving constantly when they're at work? Do they stay in a specific place for easy access? Like, where is their kind of, like, what's their mode when they get into kind of, like, park mode?
I kind of feel like there's probably a pretty big plaza-y area with ringed by all the different kinds of examples of structures that rocks can make, and, you know, kind of the basics as you walk in, and then there's the gift shop, and then more maze-like trails you can kind of take to look at things. And I feel like Nat would probably hang out mostly, you know, in that plaza, but toward the edges somewhere. And then occasionally you could also find them in, there's a space where there's an overhanging, like almost like a shade structure, like a tree of a mostly transparent quartz-like rock. And sometimes he'll be found under that, where that someone has made an art piece that reflects it as though there's a pool.
You're over there at the court, then there's kids standing around that looking down. Wow. Can I touch it? Is it water? And they're all like, they have all these kind of, you've been feeling a lot of just like The kids seem so immediately comfortable, and maybe partially it's because you're closer to their size, partially because you're the one who's telling them all the fun secrets and stuff, but Nat definitely gets kind of like gently pulled and tugged and questioned a lot by these children. And you're kind of in the middle of this when you hear somebody, like a voice from sort of the other side, and it sort of echoes through this little like quartz, just go, Nat?
Does Nat recognize this voice?
I think that's up to you.
I think that might be up to the dice. Should we should we do an high-low?
Yeah,
that?
Let's do it.
So Nat perks up a little in a way that the kids maybe haven't seen and kind of tilts their head and feels like they recognize this voice just a little bit. And that's not very common for them in the day-to-day, unless they're, you know, sometimes here at the park, but just barely. There's this feeling, and more than a feeling, they suddenly get a thought of a like roly-poly bug for no apparent reason. Turns around to see if they can see who said their name.
Nat turns and sees another little goblin. They look probably around the same age as Nat, and they are just staring. They seem kind of, it's not fear, it's like complete shock. Nat?
Oh, hello there. Yeah, I know, it's really strange and it's rare to see goblins around here, you know? But, hi, did Sally send you my way?
And you see that they get kind of a little closer, they're like, Nat, don't you remember me?
Well, you know, I kind of felt like I'd heard your voice before, but, what's your name, friend?
It's Jester.
Oh, hi, Jester. My name's Nat Hatchery, which I guess you knew already.
Nice to meet you, Nat. That's an unusual name.
There's just this little moment of hesitation and confusion while Nat's listening to Jester say, nice to, and then when Jester says, nice to meet you, kind of almost maybe a relief, but also just a...
Yeah, it is an unusual name, you know? My family's not from around here, you know? I'm the first generation to live out here in the archipelago.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How'd you end up, did you move here then?
I guess I did. You know, I was out, doing some research, and I came upon the wastes, and, you know, they were just the most magnificent thing I'd ever seen, and the next thing I knew, there was the archipelago in front of me, like, people say it looks like a mountain that's upside down, but really it's so much more than that because it was just like torn out of the earth, right? So some of the rocks are softer and some of them are harder, and you got these drips and globules and gloops and funny parts that are carved out that you'd never get if it was upright.
Make an insight check for me.
Rolled a 19, so I would say that's probably like a 22.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I think Nat is fairly used to watching people kind of fall into, like, they kind of, like, sit with the not remembering and, like, either they're blunt or young enough to ask questions, or they are a little bit more socially aware enough to kind of just, like, accept and move on and, like, let's... And I think what Nat sees in Jaster's expression is just, like, someone who is trying to hide that they are devastated.
Anyway, so yeah, it was maybe the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And since I couldn't really you know, those fairy portals, hard to get back. I just thought, well, I guess this is where I live now. And it's so full of some of the most beautiful things you'd ever see. You know, I can tell that maybe this place makes you a little bit sad. And I know that there's not, you know, a lot of greenery like us goblins are used to in other places. But I can assure you, it's a pretty beautiful place.
I think that Nat has misinterpreted the reason for the devastation.
And I think you see, he sees the brow kind of furrow and he goes, but you love it here? You happy here?
I guess I am. I mean, I got a great job somewhere where I get to look at all the cool stuff that I love. And you know, these kids, they ain't gonna teach themselves about any plasma slugs, are they? And, you know, I go down to the port in the plug and they know me pretty well, you know? You know, I don't think I've ever met the owner, but some of the regulars know me there.
That's great, Professor. That's great, Nat. That's wonderful. I think I have to go. But, just really glad you're happy here. And, I wish you the best in everything that you do.
Ah, thanks. You know, if you ever want to take a look around the wastes a little bit more, or, you know, learn about pill bugs or anything like that.
Pill bugs?
Yeah. Yeah, we got some special ones out here. They grow this big. They're all made out of labradorite on the outside, but they're just like a normal pill bug on the inside. And we got some really cool ones if you ever want to go take a look at them. You know, you remind me of someone I knew a long time ago, but you know, they were a lot younger than you. So, you know.
Yeah,
you look a little bit like them.
Kids, looking at pill bugs together and stuff, right?
Yeah, kids never grow out of pill bugs. Well, I guess I'm not a kid, but I never grew out of pill bugs either.
Yeah, thank you. What's that place, the port and something?
The port and plug.
Yeah, maybe I'll see you around there sometime.
Oh, that'd be great. Really nice to meet you, Jaster.
Yeah. Nice to meet you too, Nat. And you see him just turn and walk away. In the hours that follow this, as Nat finishes up and is doing his shift and is on, how does Nat feel, or does it not really register as anything that unusual at all?
I think that the interaction doesn't necessarily register and is going to be pretty immediately forgotten. But Nat starts to think about, you know, people he knew before they moved here. Well, before they ended up here. They don't know why, but they start to think of a friend of theirs from a long time ago. And Nat doesn't tend to really dwell on those things because, you know, that's not really a part of Nat's life right now. But she does carry with her some of the joys of those times. And so she starts to kind of think of before she was an adult and before she was doing the things that they're doing now. And for whatever reason, that just seems to be kind of in the back of his mind all day. And not necessarily Jaster is somebody that they knew, not necessarily Jaster specifically, but just the, you know, that part of their life.
At the end of the day, does Nat have any sort of ritual as he closes up the park for the night? Essentially, the park is sort of remains open, but the exhibits themselves are sort of closed. So, like, the cave system area gets shut down for the night, and the exhibits kind of go under, like, some magical protection.
Yeah, I think that Nat just, because they don't have any opening or closing duties at the park.
They know better.
they know better. But they do have a routine. And they go by all the exhibits and they visit them all and they say goodnight to the slugs, and they check to see if there's any new parts of the cave system that have gotten new slug drawings to just kind of know if they're there. They go by the little rock crab under the stacked, where they live under the stacked rocks that aren't stacked by people, but that are stacked, would have been stacked by nature, but were stacked by people because we're in a geological park. Reconstructed kind of like the dinosaurs are. They take them and they reconstruct them in the way that they were, where they were. And just kind of like, you know, says goodnight and goes by the reflecting pool and just kind of runs a hand over it and taps it a couple of times. And maybe for a minute looks a little bit sad, and then takes the edge of their little hanky and kind of buffs out any spots that aren't reflecting the quartz right. And then trundles back by, waves to Sally as she locks up the back door of the gift shop, always manages to somehow walk right past exactly as she's doing that, and gets to the front and checks all of their pockets to make sure there's nothing in there. No notes for Sam, no little things, nothing they forgot. Maybe if they got any little gifts from the kids that actually belong back out in the park, you know, they find everything in their pockets, get it where it's supposed to go. And then, you know, there's the little door to Sam's big rock, just kind of taps on the top of the rock in a little, the same pattern that Esther uses in the morning on the top of Nat's bedroom, and heads out.
Does Nat make a stop at the port and plug that night?
Yeah, I think so. I think Nat makes a stop at the port and plug just as a treat. Yeah. Just for
today. And
just
of course,
today.
It's just a little treat. It's just for today. So when...
Not every day. But,
so when...
But it is definitely every day.
So when Nat arrives and their favorite treat is already sitting on the bar, what a delightful surprise.
What a delightful surprise. Oh, look at this. I didn't know anybody here know how to make rat brain mousse.
Oh, yeah. Good evening, Nat. Good to see you again.
Oh, hi there. Are you the owner of this fine establishment?
I am the owner of this fine establishment.
What a wonder. I've been here so many times and I've been waiting to meet you.
What an incredible coincidence it is. It's so lovely, and you've been coming here so long, Nat, that all the staff told me you'd be coming in for your favor today.
Well, they know that I can't resist. I don't come in every day, but I do come in a lot of days, I will admit. Well, thank you so much for this. What was your name there?
Maeve. Nice. And she's a kind of Goliath woman. She offers a much larger hand.
Nat's little tiny hand just shakes it very vigorously.
Oh, yeah. I've been told that you like the stool at the end of the bar. In case you have anybody who comes up's got any questions about the waste for you. So I made sure it was nice and empty for you tonight.
Well, that's such a great idea. Thank you so much, Maeve.
Oh, you're so very welcome. And, you know, before Nat even has a chance to ask, like, whatever their usual, like, drink order would be, Maeve's, like, slid it across the bar over to where they've been sitting. Like, this is every day.
For whatever reason, the short term never makes it to long term with Maeve. And
Maeve truly could not care less. Like, Maeve's like, you're a paying customer and you're not a dick to my staff. So welcome back.
So Nat hunkers down at the, kind of crawls up on the stool, still wearing their work shorts and their little, probably like little ankle socks and their little hiking boots, and but kind of unbuttons their work shirt, and they've got a little tank top on underneath. And, you know, if it's warm out, they'll take their shirt and they'll very carefully put it under their butt on the stool, but they'll slip the arm of it through a belt loop just in case. And they hunker down with their rat brain mousse and their warm cider, and they're just happy to be there.
Maeve sort of lets Nat settle in for a while for the evening, and then comes up and is kind of like tapping, like just, oh, this is,
Well, so, of course, my staff's told me that you work at the Geological Park, one of my favorite places in the city. But I never heard you were a professor.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I was. That was somewhere else, though, you know. That was a different... That's all of us, you know, that was a different Nat.
Oh, yeah.
I think, I don't think I could do any professoring now if you asked me to.
You know, sometimes we get a call in and sometimes we get a call in for something else completely.
It's always been about the rocks, though. Have always liked the rocks. That's always been my thing.
You know, between you and me, before I started this, I used to be into some very intense martial arts before I decided to open myself up to this beauty right here.
Oh, wow, that's a very different path. But, you know, you look like you'd be good at that.
Thank you. I very much appreciate it. And you could tell, like, on her face, there's definitely kind of a little bit of a smile that, like, she still keeps in good shape. Just kind of like...
That's not flirting with her.
No, exactly. It's definitely this kind of, like, element of, like, she, like, winks at him, but, like, you're not going to remember me tomorrow. So I don't think that's very appropriate. You know, just kind of like she's just like, listen, nothing's going to happen, but... You know, it could happen in your heart.
They could live in hope.
We can live in hope, exactly. The one day you come in and remember my name, then we'll go on a date, Nat. And she sort of taps at the bar and she says, friend came in here, friend of yours came in here, said I was to give you something, but only if you wanted it.
Friend of mine? Did they say what their name was?
Don't believe I caught a name, but... Also a little goblin fella.
Oh, wow, that's pretty rare in these parts, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I suppose we probably are friends then, you know? Well, I mean, sure, I guess, why not? I got a lot of friends. I like gifts.
And you see that Maeve kind of, like, feels under the bar and then pulls up, like a hardback book. And... On the cover, the book says, The Many Arms of the Armadillo Day, a comprehensive history of wood lice and other terrestrial crustaceans.
Oh, wow. This is a really nice gift. Oh, gosh. Well, that must have been a really nice guy.
Said to pass it along to you. I think gentleman may have been the one who wrote the book. And there's a little picture of Jaster, like, wearing, like, a little cardigan and some little glasses.
Does the book smell like anything?
Yeah. It's interesting because the book, this is the best way I can describe it. The book seems like it is, like, near mint new book, but it smells kind of old. It smells sort of a little mildewy or a little, like, weather-worn. Like, this book has been... around a bunch. This is a well-traveled book, even if it's in, like, really nice condition.
Yeah. I think Nat takes it and sees the picture and is like, oh, that kind of looks like somebody I knew a long time ago. That's funny. And starts really just, like, devouring this book because it's about bugs.
It's, like, well-written. Actually, let's do a roll for how well-written it is. Let's go. I'll do it.
Let's find out.
Damn, Jaster! Jaster, a natural nat, like, a nat 19, and I was definitely going to add at least 2 to it, but it's engaging. It's, like, you like bugs, but even if you didn't like bugs, it's, so for a comprehensive history of essentially, like, pill bugs and other pill bug-related creatures, it is deeply accessible. There are lots of fun diagrams, there's, you know, it's very conversational in places. You're like, this is a damn good book about bugs!
What a great day!
And the cover, there's just a small inscription, it's not fancy, it says, to Professor Nat Hatchery from your very first student. And that's all it says.
So I think Nat reads most of the book before they notice that there's even an inscription. Just really into it. Probably, you know, done with their little dessert and probably on their second drink, which they they have a tally system on the bar with the staff where Nat puts up their payment for their drink, but they don't take it so that Nat knows how many drinks that they've had.
There's just like a little stack of the silver, like it just exists there.
Yeah, just like one for each, just like you're
helps,
like you
just helps Nat keep track of how much Nat drank, and also
yeah. And then Nat flips back to the beginning and just stops. My very first student. And Nat tries to think about something specific from that long ago. And even though Nat doesn't have long-term memory loss, there's something in the way that their brain works, that they look at it and they read it, and they go, my very first student, you know? I wonder who my very first student was. Well, there was the class of 28, and there was the... they were all kind of students together, and starts thinking about it for a while and shuts the book while thinking about it and takes a sip and then is like, oh, what a great book. I gotta read this book. Somebody said someone gave me this book. I don't remember. Hey, do you know where this book came from, Barkeep?
Oh, yes, this book, that's your book, Mr. Thatchery.
Oh, that's Hatchery, but that's fine. It's my...
Oh, I'm so sorry. Sometimes I'm terrible with names.
You know what? Sometimes I'm terrible with most things, so it's fine. I think that Nat knows that they have short-term memory problems, but I don't know that they know, like, what the timing is on it.
Yeah, 100%.
So they've got precautions they take, but they also... Those precautions are sometimes, you know, suggested by other people.
Exactly.
Right?
If it doesn't need a precaution, then why put one in place?
Yeah. You know, you miss your first day of work and then somebody is like, oh, how about we put what day it is on your shirts? You know,
Exactly.
And so Nat's like, oh, that's great. This looks like a really cool book. You know, I know a lot about pill bugs, but I don't know everything about pill bugs. And Nat just opens to somewhere in the middle. And starts reading again. And this happens a couple of times until at some point, someone at the bar takes a little piece of paper and it's just the napkin for now and just writes on it Nat's book.
Yeah, exactly.
And folds it over the cover so that then as this happens five or six times over the next hour or two while Nat's having their little nightcap, they then start to be like, oh, what a great book. And, you know, eventually they stop being distracted by other things and they're so engrossed in the book that they actually make it through pretty much all of the book.
How do you think Nat ends their night?
I think that if there was something that Jaster and Nat used to do, even though Nat doesn't necessarily know, by the time he finishes the book, he has already not noticed the inscription. And he never did figure it out who it was. But he sees that picture. He's like, you know, that really does remind me of my friend Jaster. Man, he would have looked something a little bit like that if he were around today. And he decides to just do what they used to do as a little treat.
Yeah.
A little treat for himself. It'll go out of his routine.
I think as you head back up to where the mid-city is, like, out, that you're going up the stairs, and there's just this, like, it's not solid and it's not placeable, but it's these little, like, two little goblin kids turning over rocks. Two little goblin kids turning over rocks. What's on the other side of the rock? And... Two little goblin kids, what's on the other side of the rock? Oh, I've seen that before. I know what that one is. Oh, what happens if you poke this one? Oh no, don't poke it, it's gotta hurt it. Okay, but look, oh my god, look, it curled up, it protected itself. There's just these sort of like, there's nothing solid. There's no like connective tissue, but these feelings of like, ew, that's gross. Wait, but there's stuff that's alive. Wait, that's so cool. How does it do that? That's so weird. How do they do that? There's a sense of, like, wonder and curiosity that
has stayed with Nat to some level all through Nat's life. But this kind of, like, find yourself walking up the stairs, and when you find, like, a loose step, lifting it up and seeing if there's anything alive under there, and if you know what it's called. And do you know what it's called first? First before what? First as fast as possible? Why does it have to be as fast as possible? But it's just cool if you know it as fast as possible.
So, especially on the stairs, since there's so many different layers of the city and so many different things that could be under there, Nat has maybe lost a little bit of track of time and has stayed out a little bit longer than Nat normally would stay out looking for cool stuff. And Nat just kind of gets the hankering that, well, you know, maybe tomorrow I'll go out to the wastes. Whether Nat's going to remember this plan or not, Nat is feeling inspired to go discover, to go look for things.
Nat heads back to his little subterranean apartment. The lights are starting to be lit in the different windows, or go out in other windows. You see that Esther's light's still on, as she's off want to do is stay up watching her programs until she falls asleep on the couch. But the little kids' bed lights, those have been turned off, the neighbors right above. When you enter the little house and the door closes behind you, you kind of hear that, like, on the floor again. Just checking in. You're home kind of late. That's that knock.
Yeah. And Nat goes, dock, dock, da, dock. And I take out all the treasures from my bag for the day. The little bit of string that a little kid gave me. I don't know why I've got it. It's just a very brightly colored piece of string. It's very cool. And I set it, you know, down, and I pull out a couple of cool little tiny fossils in various types of smooth rock that normally you wouldn't see a fossil in. You can't tell if it's a fossil, or if you were uneducated, you might think it's an etching, but Nat knows that that's actually the fresh leavings, the fresh sloughing off of the old skin of one of the stone creatures that lives in the area, and sets the book down and puts them in a little corner of one of the surfaces that's still free, and gets out his little notepad and gets out a journal looking thing and writes in it.
Well, today was a pretty good day. Looks like I got a piece of string. That string is very bright. It's kind of a red color. I got three whole, wow, yeah, very intact pieces off of the obsidian butterflies, but only the juveniles, it looks like. I got one very cool book that is mine. Great. It's mine, and it is about hell bugs and other crustaceans, land crustaceans, and then takes the very bottom of the same page. You can see that most of the pages in the book have something torn or cut off the bottom. Tears it off, writes in very neat block lettering, makes it into a little tent, writes in very neat block lettering. Thursday! Looks around, looks at the automatic calendar that he's got next to the door. He writes down the date from the automatic calendar, and then he looks at his watch. Oh, it's very late. Writes down the time of night that it is, and he sets it next to this little diorama of the three or four things out of his bag in his pockets. And then he, you know, he has had his dessert. He is feeling a little hungry because I think we skipped dinner tonight. Dinner normally would have been while we were looking for pill bugs. So looks in the cabinet labeled snacks and grabs a little snack and tucks themselves into bed ready for the next day.
What do you think as Nat slips off to sleep, their last thoughts of the day are?
I think their last thoughts are a little bit dreamlike, and I think that they try to hold on to the pieces of the day that they still have. So I think that they think of the worm and the slug cave, and they think of all the paths that the slugs have, and they try to think of the new paths and see, and they think to themselves, well, I don't know if that's what the new paths look like, but that would be a good spot for a new path. We can just imagine it. And then they think over the things that they got and they think, you know, I wonder where I could have gotten those, you know? You know, maybe, you know, we do see a lot of those juvenile obsidian butterflies on over by the stairs. I wonder if we found some of those underneath the stairs. Well, I'll have to go looking in an adventure there one of these days. And thinks back and looks at the book. He kind of looks at everything on his little shelf. He looks at the other pieces of rock from the waste and the little gifts that kids have given him. There's a couple of drawings of the slugs, a couple of drawings of Nat, a couple of drawings of Sam, obviously. And he thinks about how those are kind of a book too. And he thinks,
yeah, I think maybe tomorrow we'll go on a big adventure. Maybe we'll go to the wastes. I think that sounds good. I got a hankering for finding some stuff I can teach people about.
Thank you for listening to this episode of What Happened in the Malachite Wastes. Each of our little adventures are spontaneous tales from our guide, Isabella Z. Vergun, and our marvelous guest. This episode followed a day in the life of Nat Hatchery, played by Megan Sky Hill. A voice actress and fixture of the Portland arts community, Megan is also the founding artistic director of Speculative Drama, an immersive theater company that aims to reclaim the relevance of myths, fairy tales, and classical texts through live theatrical performances. You can support them on Patreon and learn more about Megan's work at MeganSkyHale.com. Nat's official character art was created by Chris at Gargoyle Pastures. This show is produced by Annalise Fisher. Our music was created and produced by our audio director, Ryan Tucker. Our sound team is Nate Kleeman as our dialogue lead, Jonathan Junkel Rodriguez as dialogue editor, and Alex Torrigan as SFX and Foley. Our incredible art team is led by our art director, Chris Gargoyle Pastures, and featuring our incredible artists, Caroline Gendron and Anna Renee Chavez. Our team would not be complete without the hard work of our social media manager, Jalen Rose, our lore keeper, Kyler Carter, and our server warlock, Alex Glika. Find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Malachite Wastes, or join us on the official Malachite Wastes Discord server to see more of their amazing contributions. If you'd like to support our team and the work they do, please consider subscribing to our Patreon, where you can find all kinds of cool bonus content like Session Zeros, Patreon-exclusive interviews and sketches, sneak peeks at upcoming art, and much, much more. You can find all of our team's incredible individual work linked in the episode description below. Thank you for listening, and remember to keep checking back with us so that you can find out what happened in the Malachite Wastes.